Hello, Happy New Year, and welcome back to Climate Changes Everything. This is Episode 5, Ancient Solar Energy, Part 1. In the last episode, we started with the big idea that electricity is the pivot for sustainability. And from there, we began a crucial and fascinating dive into the world of electricity generation, the very surface of the picture, a complex mosaic, but viewed at a distance. In other words, it was easy to tell the cowboys in the white hats from the cowboys in the black hats, from the cowboys in the gray hats. Hero, villain, anti-hero, anti-villain, pretty straightforward. In this episode of Climate Changes Everything, we'll move in for a closer look, a more nuanced look, into the necessary complexity of those fuels and technologies. As we do, we'll see those white, black, and gray hats start to blur together. Even for seemingly obvious good guys like renewable energy and seemingly obvious bad guys like coal. My goal is to illuminate enough of that mosaic so that we can start to look at the system as a whole, seeing how the power system converts the raw electricity supply coming out of the generators into the reliable, affordable, and safe electric service that we use to power our lives and our world. As amazing as that mosaic is, it is a static mosaic. But these interesting times that we live in aren't static, of course, quite the opposite. Dynamism is fundamental to the age of climate change, even for big embedded legacy systems like the power system. With climate changing everything and electricity as the pivot for sustainability, we need a solid understanding of that system so that we can start to address fundamental questions. Questions like, how do we simultaneously decarbonize and electrify while maintaining the 24/7, 365 thrive that our society's lives and economies depend on? The truth is, I have no idea how many episodes that will take, but I'm committed to the journey and to making it as educational, insightful, and enjoyable as I can, whether you are a full-on climate champion, climate curious, or even a climate skeptic. We are all in this together. So let's venture closer to that mosaic, and as you'll see, watch those different colored hats start to blur. As we do, we'll work across the life cycles and the ecosystems of each fuel and technology, from the obvious elements like reliability, costs, and environmental impacts during operations, to the not so obvious aspects like value to the power system as a whole, environmental impacts both pre and post operating life, local job creation and ancillary economic benefits, and local environmental justice issues. Your conclusions, call it the sum of all necessary complexity, may surprise you. I'd like to start at the very beginning with solar power in all its forms. Today, we're not going to talk about modern solar panels catching today's sunlight. We'll get there. But ancient sunlight, like 200 to 300 million year old sunlight, stored for us in three forms: solid, gas, and liquid. As you may have guessed, solid means coal, gas means methane, also known as natural gas, and liquid means oil. There are plenty of variations on each of these, of course, but we'll start with coal, gas, and oil for starters. More broadly, I frame our seemingly distinct energy sources as variations on a single theme to make a larger point. Fossil or renewable, coal or gas or oil, or solar or wind or geothermal, it all starts with that big shiny ball in the sky, our sun. We've just gotten better and better at using the sun's energy more and more cleanly, but the source energy remains the same. Today, we're going to dig, pardon the pun, into the fully matured and most widely used solid form of ancient sunlight, coal, and its application in the climate pivotal power system in the form of coal-fired generation. For many of us, coal seems to be the obvious black hat in the bunch, the easy villain. And for climate champions, it's easy to see coal as history, literally, a past tense fuel, so to speak. That past tense is still aspirational, though, whether in the US or China or India or many other parts of the world. It remains very much in the present and even future tense, and in a big, big way. So we need to understand it beyond the simplistic black hat and the past tense, and see some perhaps surprising opportunities for coal workforces, communities, and infrastructure going forward. For human beings, coal has always been about opportunity. Coal has been utilized for heating since time immemorial. Back just a few centuries, we owe the first industrial revolution to coal, both the newly developed coal-fired steam engines designed to pump water out of ever deeper mines, to the canals, railways, and other infrastructure that grew up around them, and thus the incredible advances in living standards and pollution and climate change, of course, that followed. White hats, black hats, gray hats, a lot of them. Let's start with the black ones. From an environmental perspective, coal-fired power generation paints a grim picture at best. Just to mine the coal itself is an environmental mess. Permanently scarred landscapes, decapitated mountains, fouled and clogged waterways and poisoned water tables, and destroyed ecosystems. Not to mention the coal industry's deeply troubling worker safety record all over the world. Cave-ins, explosions, drownings, asphyxiations, black lung, silicosis. The regulations and the languages change, but the risks and impacts are the same, whether you're in the United States, China, Australia, India, Canada, or Indonesia, just to name some of the top coal-producing countries. Today, with mines going deeper and deeper to find coal, using bigger and bigger drilling machines over longer and longer work shifts, black lung and other dust-driven killers are actually on the rise. It is a truism that there are and never have been many older workers in coal mines, no matter where you are in the world. A quick Google search on coal mining will probably scare you to death. It did me. Not just the risks and impacts themselves, but for me at least, the haunting realization that while there are ways to do it better, there are not ways to do it well. Now, once out of the mine and transported to the power plant, worker safety improves substantially, at least in the US, and I say that by way of an example and not by comparison, to be clear. But the environmental picture, while much improved under the US Clean Air Act and similar regulations in other parts of the world, is still pretty grim in the modern context. As we've already discussed, burning coal produces significant amounts of greenhouse gases and other pollutants, with both local and planetary impacts. But those impacts are not uniform, because unlike other fossil fuels, like coal, like gasoline or natural gas, coal is not uniform. What we call coal is not a standard thing. Across continents, countries, and regions, even from mine to mine and coal seam to coal seam, the chemistry of what comes out of the ground differs significantly. To best understand that, we need to set the Wayback Machine to about 300 million years ago and head to the forests, jungles, and marshes that covered a lot of the planet's landmass. Did you bring strong bug spray? Are you wearing sturdy footwear and a really sensible hat that would look goofy outside of this context? Good, you're ready. But then we step out of the Wayback Machine and look around. No coal to be seen. Just plants rocks, water, sunlight, the occasional dinosaur or small mammal scurrying around, perhaps. Pretty underwhelming, really. But those plants, rocks, water, and sunlight then are in fact the coal today. The sun's energy and the planet's water growing the plants, those plants dying and being replaced by new growth, and so on. Over 200 to 300 million years. Feel free to sing The Circle of Life from The Lion King at this point. And to keep singing, as those plant remains are compacted, hardened, and chemically altered by heat and pressure over geologic time. Now, fair warning, The Circle of Life is only about a 4-minute song, and you'll be singing it for about 300 million years, so 525,600 minutes in a year divided by 4 multiplied by 300 million, I get 3.942 times 10 to the 13th, or 3942 followed by 10 zeros. Check my math, but I bet even Sir Elton John has not sung it that many times. But back to that prehistoric landscape. As you probably guessed, the heat energy we get from burning the coal now is the same energy that went from the sun into those growing plants back then. Solar energy, oxygen, and water then, coal now. No wonder coal is often referred to as stored sunlight. It is ancient, solidified solar power. And that's important, as those environments differed back then, millions of years ago. Thus, so does the resulting coal that we mine today. The differences come from two big factors. First of all, the other stuff, the minerals and such, that got baked in with the plant matter. Hydrogen, sulfur, oxygen, nitrogen, and then the amount of heat and pressure under which those ingredients were baked. More heat and pressure, the higher quality of the resulting coal. With the phrase higher quality, meaning more heat and less of the other stuff. It can all be burned to release that energy as heat, use that heat to make steam, and with the power of that steam, turn a generator to make electricity. So far, so relatively straightforward. And straightforwardly bad, right? So far, yes, but let's add some necessary complexity. Just as coal varies significantly, so do the power plants that convert it into electricity. In fact, coal plants are engineered from the get-go to burn a specific variety of coal. So much heat content, ash content, pollutants produced per ton, and so on. Often from a specific mine or a combination of specific mines. That's an important point, as the multi-decade, hundreds of millions of dollars or billion-dollar investment in the plant itself must often be matched by a multi-decade investment in the mines, railroads, barges, and other infrastructure needed to mine the coal and get it to the power plant. It's an intentional integration of unique elements, a mutually dependent ecosystem of capital, human beings, and infrastructure. And then there are significant differences from there, and many deserving of a deep dive in future episodes. For one, boiler temperature is a big determinant, the higher the better for both fuel efficiency and environmental efficiency. In other words, at higher temperatures, less coal is needed, and thus less greenhouse gas is produced, to make a given amount of electricity. It is also newer technology that's often found only in newer plants, and expensive technology, which thus may be infeasible for less affluent countries, that also make a big difference. Other differences arise with the constituents of the coal and what else is added to the coal in the combustion process. For example, high sulfur coal burns hotter and is thus more efficient, but sulfur is a major cause of acid rain. To mitigate that, limestone can be added and or lower sulfur coal can be brought to the plant. But that transportation brings, for example, its own GHG impact and cost impacts. On the exhaust end of the plant, engineering controls can mitigate those pollutants. Think of a catalytic converter in the exhaust system of your car, for example, except a catalytic converter the size of a shoebox, imagine one the size of your garage. These technologies mitigate environmental impacts, but the costs of installation and operation cannot be ignored. And neither can the local environmental impacts. No matter how much mitigation technology is attached to a plant, it is impossible to eliminate pollution. That is especially important at the local level. The microscopic airborne particles, called particulate matter, or PM for short, drive a disproportionate number of negative public health outcomes, which, you guessed it, fall disproportionately on the poor and communities of color where industrial facilities like power plants tend to be located. We can't forget water either. Mind-boggling amounts of water, especially for cooling. Mind-boggling as in the equivalent use of 1 billion people day in, day out, year in, year out, just for global coal-fired power generation. Needless to say, we'll dive deep into the water-energy nexus in future episodes. Amidst all these challenges, it's important to note that the technologies in every aspect of the power plant have grown more efficient, both environmentally and economically, over time. But as we saw for coal mining, for coal-fired power generation, there are ways to do it better, but not ways to do it well. That's coal's black hat, or maybe hats is more accurate. It's not a pretty picture, especially after I've just passed 2,000 words and barely scratched the surface. But it's not an unmitigated picture either. The gray and even white hats are there too, and especially important to understand as we design a power system and a world beyond coal. From the first hominids keeping themselves warm and alive by burning those strange black rocks, then the coal-fired steam engines and the coal-carrying canals and railroads, without which the Industrial Revolutions simply would not have occurred. The extraordinary growth in living standards catalyzed by all that energy, that infrastructure, and that industry. And now, to our intensely and every day ever more so electrified world. Our amazing world is, in large part, made of coal. And so are many of our lives and communities. The coal economy has provided durable jobs, tax bases, and ancillary economic benefits that millions of our fellow human beings rely on around the world. At an even more granular level, coal-fired power plants still play a vital role in maintaining the reliability and stability of the power grid. We'll explore that necessary complexity in an episode or two very soon. So how does climate change everything? Coal, this ancient solid solar energy, has been pivotal for very good and very bad for us humans. And with coal itself, coal-fired power generation, and the larger coal economy, no matter who we are or where we are in the world, tremendous cascading benefits at tremendous cascading costs. Black hats, gray hats, white hats, big ones. At a minimum, coal's role in climate change compels us to move on. Move on from coal, but not the people who have built their lives around it. We would be foolish to do so, both from a social justice and an economic perspective. In other words, there is no need to choose a hat, let alone winners or losers, in this transition. We can do well and do good. As we discuss the various power generation technologies and the power grid itself in future episodes, we'll see how rebooting highly skilled, hardworking people and communities and legacy coal infrastructure can create huge opportunities in this age of climate change. More white hats and fewer gray hats and fewer black hats. Opportunities for innovation and renewal, such as energy storage, green hydrogen, modular nuclear power, microgrids, and artificial intelligence, just to name a few. In other words, how climate is changing everything. As always, thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.